You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life.
So how do you approach super when your goal is to fire? What do you do with it? Does it even matter? Should you include it in your early retirement plans and portfolio? And how do you actually go about it? So today, Dave and I will talk about what to consider and how do you know if your super fund is crap, what you should look out for, and what are some sensible ways to invest it. So this is quite a huge topic, Dave, and so huge that I think I've now written 4 separate blog posts about it, and I've probably got another at least 1, maybe 2 in the works.
Yeah, wow. I've only done 1. You're killing me, mate. I think I've read all of yours.
Yeah. Every time I look into it, I'm just like, that's right. Super. So crap. So, super, what is it? What is it, Dave?
Super is like one of the first things when you start getting interested in money. I don't know about you, but for me, it was one of the first things you start looking at because everyone knows that you've got at least some of it sitting there and it's kind of important once you start learning about money. You think, I must look into that, you know, because it's going to matter to me later on. So what is super? Well, super was set up in 1992, essentially as a way for Aussies to become self-funded retirees in the future when they hit their retirement age. And so how it works is your employer puts some money in, a percentage of your pay essentially, and it gets invested and it grows over time. And ideally, by the time you hit retirement age, you'll have enough to live on from that pool of savings. Or if you don't, it should supplement your pension at the very least. And so you'll find that current generations who are retired now generally don't have enough super to live on because super hasn't been around for their entire working careers like it would be for me and you, Pat.
Yeah, but it's getting close, isn't it?
Yes.
Like 1992.
That's what, 30 years almost?
Almost 30 years. It was a lower rate to begin with though, wasn't it? It wasn't the 9.5 it is today.
No, I don't know what it started at though, do you?
No, I
8%
don't.
8% maybe?
I know it was much lower. It was a few percentage points.
We should know.
we should have researched this before we decided to talk about it, shouldn't we?
Oh, goodness. We just lost all credibility and faith from our listeners.
I think that happened at least 10 episodes ago.
So you'll find that the older generation, they will have property and share investments of their own as a way to attempt to become self-funded retirees, since they would have realized very quickly that they weren't going to have enough super.
Yeah, well, those who could definitely did, but this, a lot of them as well that just relied on the pension. They didn't put a lot away at all.
And back in the day, there was company pensions as well, where those are almost extinct now, essentially, where the company would set aside provisions for paying for employees' retirement. Back in the days where you would work at the same company for most of your life, where that was quite common.
Yes, and then there was the whole government sector defined benefits superannuation schemes, which is crazy. That doesn't exist anymore. I don't know anywhere in the world does.
They don't run those for anyone now?
Only people who are grandfathered in.
Yeah, okay.
And there's not a lot of them going around anymore because, as we just said, it's already been like about 30 years. So they will slowly die off by natural attrition. And then it will all just be defined contribution schemes.
And so I guess for younger generations, like for us, it will be very interesting to see if the people that have been putting money away in their super for their whole working careers and they do retire at traditional age, if that will end up being enough. So that will be interesting to find out later on.
Yeah, definitely.
What we have in super probably doesn't seem like a lot now, especially if you're in your 20s or maybe even if you're in your 30s. But because of the regular additions from each paycheck and the compounding returns over time, even if they're not huge returns, it will multiply on itself over the course of a traditional career and end up being quite a decent sum of money.
Yeah, it should honestly be really, really great having that in there for 30 to 40 years. So get in early, right?
So I guess this brings us to kind of our main point here. Where does super fit for people who don't want to retire at the traditional age, Pat? What about if we want to retire early? Where does super fit into our plans?
Well, the range of views on this is at both extreme ends of the spectrum. Mm. And it is, I do not care about super whatsoever. It is dead to me. Or super is the most important part of your retirement plan.
Yeah, it is really interesting that some people with such a polarizing topic and some people, it's like they have a genuine hate for super. And other people absolutely love it not as a vehicle, but as a place to store your wealth and invest, because it's not an investment in itself. It's not a different type of investment. It's just a structure to invest through.
Yeah, and so we disclose our biases here. I'm definitely on that other end of the spectrum, which is, oh God, super. I'm not a big fan of it at all, but I don't hate it. I don't think it's dead to me.
Yeah, I don't hate it at all. I mean, I think it's going to be very useful for so many people. And I certainly care about my super, but I definitely didn't make it a part of my financial independence plans as such. But we'll get into that a bit later in the show. Mm. So, yeah, some people say invest as much as you possibly can into super because of the lower tax rate that you can achieve. And others say don't put a single cent extra into super. Yes. Just invest everything outside of super and build up your own investments and live off those instead.
Yeah, it's so easy to live in a black and white world, isn't it? All of those grays, they just complicate things. They make it harder to draw pictures. It's
Hey, so what are the issues with going all in on super? I think this should be pretty obvious to everyone involved, but if it isn't,
it's not accessible whatsoever until you reach preservation age, which at the moment is 60 years old.
Yeah.
So that could potentially be, 40 years if you're just starting in your career at, 20. That's a very huge...
It's double your lifespan if you're 20 years old. But so you can't even comprehend that amount of time before you can access that money.
That's right. And even for someone like my age, I'm 32, so it's still 28 years away. Mm. That's my entire life again, almost.
Yeah, me too, man.
Access super.
It's hard to comprehend waiting that long.
It's very hard to comprehend waiting that long.
And so we should probably just specify here, this is very different from people who are trying to retire early in the US, because they can access their retirement accounts penalty-free.
Yes. And there are certain strategies and stuff that they can use to do that. But we have a much tighter lockdown system than the US does for... I'm not sure whether it's intentional in the US or whether it was just loopholes or whatever. Mm. But in any case, we definitely don't have those options here. So, no matter which way you dice it, I don't know anyone who's found a way to get to their super early legitimately.
So when you hear via type bloggers or podcasters in the US say, max out your retirement accounts and all the rest of it, it's not the same kind of scenario here and not the same kind of trade-off. So, yeah, it's important to make sure that you understand that it's very different in Australia.
Yes. So this also brings up another issue. Our preservation age is currently 60, but that preservation age has been raised in the past, and no doubt it may be raised again in the future. So you can't even rely on it to be 60 years old when you get to 60 years old. And I'm on the end of the spectrum, which actually thinks it's actually quite likely that it'll go up in age at some point in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's a lot of, we just spoke about how long of a time frame it is. And so that's a long time to, that's a long time available for things to change. Things can change quickly, let alone over a long time. So a lot can change over that period. And there's a lot of uncertainty. We really don't have any control over whether the rules get changed or the access age is moved backwards. And we might be putting all our hopes and dreams on it being 60 and it gets moved to 65 or 67 or something. And we really... Yeah, I don't want to be personally reliant on that, do you, Pat?
No, not at all. And just to clarify, I mean, we understand that rules around personal investments can change as well, but it's just been more likely in the past that rules around super have changed, or they've changed more frequently. And yeah, I just wanted to point that out. That's why we pay more attention to those rule changes, I suppose, because it just seems to happen much more often.
Yeah, it does. It seems to come up at every election.
Pretty well, eh?
Yeah. So another issue with going all in on super is, should be pretty obvious, you'll need enough wealth to actually live on or draw upon until you can reach your super access age if you're planning to retire early. Because if you want to leave work at 30 or 40, what are you going to live on until you do reach 60 or whatever the age is? To access your super. So you're still going to need money to live on outside of super. No matter if you've got $10 million in there, that's not going to help you pay your bills and achieve some sort of early retirement if you're quite young.
Yeah, and this turns out not to be a trivial amount of money either.
Because that might be a few decades, you know, that you've got to fund your expenses for, at least semi-fund them for a very long time.
Yes. Okay, but what are the issues with using personal accounts only and completely ignoring super? So this isn't an option for most of us, but there are definitely like sole traders and stuff which have to make their own contributions to super. And I have definitely heard of people that just don't do it for themselves when they own their own businesses and they're sole traders. So those sorts of people have the option of just investing in personal accounts and ignoring super altogether. The problem with this, of course, is that you miss out on the tax advantages of investing in super. I think most people, most everyone is on a higher tax rate than the superannuation tax rate. So superannuation tax rate is 15%. My marginal tax rate is definitely higher than that. And I imagine most Australians' marginal tax rate is higher than that. So you end up missing out on the tax savings if you decide not to invest in super, not put your money into super to invest, I should say.
And so this is really the main key point that people bring up when they say you have to put as much as you possibly can into super because you're taxed at only 15% versus if you invest in your personal name, you might be getting taxed at, say, 37% or maybe even higher. So they say it's an absolute no-brainer to just chuck as much as you can into super because of the tax savings.
Yeah, not a no-brainer for me. Which brings us to what do we do and why? Dave, do you want to start here? How did you and how do you currently handle super now that you're no longer working?
So I decided pretty quickly that I didn't want to put extra money into super if I didn't have to, because I could quickly see that, well, if I want to retire, you know, in my 30s or something like that, then having money in super until I'm 60 is going to be absolutely no benefit to me whatsoever. I mean, it's nice to have later, but it's not going to help me retire super early. So I'd rather invest in my personal account. And that's what we did. We invested everything, every single dollar almost in our personal accounts and built up our wealth outside super. And I'm glad I did. I mean, there's absolutely no chance that I would be not working today if I had just thrown everything I could into super. It just wouldn't work.
Yes, clearly not.
And so there's like this split fraction of time when I was like 19 or something like that, where I thought, oh yeah, I started becoming interested in wealth, and I thought, oh, I might start putting a little bit extra into super. I'll put $20 a week, and I did that for like 3 or 4 weeks, and then I'm like, nah, this isn't gonna work because I need the money to, you know, retire early.
I need that money sooner.
I wish I could get that money back, man. That's like 1 or 2 weeks grocery money now, you know. Or I could have retired a couple of days earlier.
Ah, oh, that would have been good. Those 2 days lost. How will you ever get them back?
I basically just leave super as it is, and it's kind of nice to have there growing in the background for me. But I would definitely, if I started again today, I would definitely focus on investing 100% in building up personal investments instead of putting money into super. But what about you, Pat?
Yeah, I think pretty well the same way, but maybe for some slightly different reasons. So I don't contribute any extra to super whatsoever. And the reason this is because it might be a little hard to explain this with just words, but I'll do my best. So I'm 35, I'm 32, and I plan to be retired around the 35 age range, somewhere in that vicinity. So that leaves 25 years at least until I can reach preservation age. If I want to be conservative and plan for a raise in the preservation age, let's say that is 65, so that's 30 years before I reach preservation age. Well, it turns out that once you do the safe withdrawal rate math on a 30-year retirement time frame, the amount you need invested isn't that much less than what you'd have to save for a 60-year retirement time frame. So if I did want to do sort of this split investment, like a lot of people recommend, I'll have a portion outside of super to get you to preservation age, then enough inside super to get you the rest of the way. What I would need outside of super will end up being enough to essentially take me for 60 years anyway, because the amount for 30 years, as I said, isn't that much different to the amount you'd need for 60 years. Mm-hmm. So take into account what I'm already getting in super from my employer, my mandatory contributions, and that I'm already on a pretty good income, so I'm getting pretty high mandatory contributions, let's say. That means what I already have in super without contributing any extra is already far more than I need to make up for the very small difference in wealth I'd need between a 30 and a 60 year time frame of retirement. I then have to think, well, I can put more in to max out my contribution limit, and that would maximize the amount of money I can make. But my goal isn't actually to maximize the amount of money I can make. It's to get to retirement as quick as possible, get to financial independence as quick as possible.
And that's like the key point, right? Because it's not about achieving the maximum level of wealth you possibly can by a certain date. It's actually being able to buy yourself your freedom, which might actually require a lower level of wealth, but wealth that you can actually access.
Yeah, correct. And this isn't trivial. Like, I feel like this is something that is missed a lot. I'll say it one more time. I know I've repeated myself twice at least.
That's okay. We do that.
The amount of money you need for a 30-year retirement is not that much less the amount you need for a 60-year retirement. Just the way the 4% rule and the safe withdrawal rate math works out. You do need more, but it's not like you don't need double the amount for a 60-year retirement that you need for a 30-year. You need like 10 or 20% more, I think. And that'll take you the rest of the 30 years because of the investment growth and the way the math works with the withdrawal rate. And if you're getting mandatory contributions, then you're probably going to have that extra 10 or 20% in there by the time you hit the retire button, if you're as early as we are, that is. So these things, and if you're on a pretty good income like I am, I should say as well. So these things are a bit more personal, and you have to look at your individual situation, and it's not the same answer for everyone.
I mean, super, you can still be, that's not to say that we'll never use super and will never contribute extra to super, because just speaking for myself, I'm not sure about you, Pat, but I would definitely consider putting more into super later on, like with any surplus wealth that I wasn't going to need to actually fund our lifestyle today. I would consider it, especially if my tax rate started to creep higher, and as we're getting a bit older and heading a bit closer towards that access age, I would consider putting more money into super later. But that would only be really any extra savings that we didn't need. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. If I was like 55 and preservation age at that point was still 60 and I had just all this extra income, yeah, why not? Just throw it into super. And then maybe if you're trying to pay off a home loan or something, that might end up being cheaper to cop the interest on the loan for another few years to save the 15% on tax or whatever it may be. There are definitely situations where it makes sense, and it makes clear sense to put more into super.
And so let's talk about one of those now that I can think of. So if you're starting at a later age, I think it definitely makes sense to more closely or more heavily consider super as a vehicle to put more money into. Because it gets very personal, but let's say you're 40 years old now and you start saving and investing and you want to retire early. If you're going to have a decent amount of super by the time you're, say, 60, which is hopefully still the access age, and let's say you're saving, investing outside of super, and you build up a semi-reasonable kind of portfolio by the age of 50. Now you only need enough savings to last you until kind of age 60. So if you had, say, half of your wealth inside super and half outside super, then you could probably easily switch to some sort of semi-retirement or part-time work and use part of the investments to live on. Maybe you can take a year or two off as well, and you can easily get yourself to age 60 while being in some sort of semi-retired state and not having to work full-time until age 60, while doing a bit of both, you know, having money inside super and outside super.
Yeah, and I think that is like the obvious example. It's the closer you get to access age, the more and more sense it makes to start considering and contributing more to super. It doesn't make the most mathematical sense, it just makes the most sense from a risk perspective and an access perspective. So it's the opposite way around mathematically. You want to contribute as much, if you're looking for the highest amount of growth, you want to contribute the most amount to super as early as possible. But we're not just looking at this mathematically.
That's missing the point, though, isn't it?
Risk and access perspective and a financial independence perspective.
Because this isn't about, you know, most amount of dollars. This is about most amount of kind of freedom, essentially.
Correct. Yeah. So if we're going to retire early and not use super, does it even matter, Dave? Like, do you consider it? Do you think about it at night? And
does it take any
clock cycles?
What did you say?
Does it take any clock cycles away from you?
I lay awake in bed with my calculator dreaming about super. I mean, yeah, I do care about it because even though I don't have a huge amount in there now, obviously leaving full-time work at 28, you're not going to have a huge amount of super, especially because I wasn't earning a six-figure income or anything like that. But it's still going to be, if I just kind of extrapolate out another 30 years, which is when I can access the money, it's still going to be quite a decent sum of savings. So I still definitely care about it, but I guess I see it more as like a backup, like a really good backup plan, or kind of something that'll complement our wealth outside of super.
Yeah. And I look at it as exactly the same thing. It's sort of a backup plan. I almost like to call it my, you know, old age, ill health.
Old man money.
Fund.
old man money.
You know, just my bad health fund. It'll be there when I get old and all of those creaks in the bones kick in and you need money for retirement homes and stuff. It's like, well, how convenient. As I'm getting to that age, I'm going to have like this big injection of cash.
Yeah, it's going to be a very handy cushion, essentially, come that later stage. And yep, so people definitely might kind of underestimate how much of a difference and how much it can compound over time. So if we consider someone who's, let's say they retire at age 30, and so far they've accumulated 100 grand in super. And so let's assume that they never work a day in their life again. They never contribute any more to their super fund. That 100 grand, even if it just grows, say 5% returns after inflation, by age 60, they'll have about $400,000. So like you were saying, Pat, that's going to be very handy when you're in that older age bracket and you might want it for a cushion or for some health reasons or something like that. And you can easily turn that into a 15 or 20 grand income stream upon that like traditional retirement age. So that's going to be very, very handy later on. So it's definitely worth considering and caring about still.
Yeah, absolutely. What should we look out for though? How do we know if we're in a good fund or a pretty lousy fund? And because you kind of hear it all the time that there are super funds that are not that great. Didn't we have a Royal Commission into superannuation quite recently, maybe a year ago or something?
Was it a Royal Commission?
I don't know.
They have a Royal Commission into everything now.
Oh, geez. So most people, I would say, are in the default option of their super fund. A lot of people might have multiple super funds, and it's usually a sort of a balanced fund that includes international shares, Australian shares, property, infrastructure, bonds, cash.
It's got a bit of everything.
Like that.
Yeah, and it's not really aggressively invested. It's more like, well, like you said, it's balanced, you know? So it's not got everything invested in high growth assets. It's got a balance. So I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's typically like a 70-30 kind of strategy where 70% is in like the higher growth investments like shares and property as well, and then the rest is in bonds and cash and something like that. Does that sound about
right? I'm not sure. I would have thought 60-40 would have been
really
more balanced, but I don't know. But anyway, these are okay. They kind of have, these pre-mixed options often have high-ish fees of around 0.5% to 1%. And that's actually quite a lot. I mean, if you go back to our episode 11 where we talked about fees.
We ranted about that fees.
You can really, it can really compound to quite a lot of money over a 30 or 40 year time frame.
Yeah. And I'm trying to like guesstimate why that is, that the that those default options do have quite high fees. I'm thinking maybe it's the, I don't know if they use active funds there, or it could be the fact that they own and operate their own like private real estate and they own direct infrastructure as well, and so there's extra costs there perhaps for the managers of those assets.
No, I think often, God, it's just a mess, honestly. When you look at these super funds like balanced options and premixed options, and even like when you go into the, say, Australian shares portion of their balanced option, they'll have like their money spread across like 10 active managers or something.
Really?
For the Australian shares component of their premixed option. It's just like, oh, what is this nonsense?
Man, so maybe that's where the costs come from.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it so much.
That's part of the problem. It's not super easy to understand for the average person. It's not super, I mean, it's kind of transparent, but not really.
It's not transparent at all.
Not in a way that people understand what's happening behind the scenes.
No, they've decided that simplifying it is better than being transparent, even though it's more complicated. So they'll say something like, oh, you're in the balanced option. And that is just a very simple way of expressing it for the consumer. But it's not really transparent. You don't really know what you're invested in or how it's invested. It's just kind of like balanced.
And so I guess if we're trying to figure out what we should look out for, fees is definitely one of them. You'll want to kind of steer clear of higher fee super funds. And so how do you know if you're in a high fee super fund? Well, generally, the retail for-profit type super funds tend to be the ones that are the most expensive because they're aiming to make a profit for the manager, not for, say, the members. And you'll find that industry super funds, which are run for members, they tend to come with much lower costs. And because of that, they tend to have better performance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I sort of have a slight beef with even industry super funds. But in the absence of any better option, then sometimes they have sort of perverse, you know, pretzel-like rationalizations. They'll say, oh, yeah, we're run only to profit members, but then they will use some of their members' money for activism in that industry that they are a part of.
Yeah, well, being just because you're profit for members doesn't mean you can't pay yourself an obscene salary and whatever, because do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The profit is still going to the members, just that there's less profit because you're paying for huge advertising campaigns and, like you said, maybe activism campaigns and all the rest of
that's
that.
Right.
So they're still technically for members, but you might just still question the way they're spending the fee money that they're earning.
That's sort of a side issue. They're still kind of, there aren't a lot of really great options. So I do think industry super funds are generally much better, much, much better than the retail ones.
Definitely the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, correct. That is, yeah, unfortunately, that's how we can describe it.
So generally we'd say, like, look out for high fees, check your statements because you'll get sent statements, and add up the costs because they have to send it to you, like all the fees that you're paying. So add those up. And if it's more than like 0.5%, I'd definitely consider switching to something else that's not so high.
Yep.
But you'll often have insurances inside super and on top of that. So that can make it look more expensive than it is, essentially.
Yeah, correct.
So you want to consider that as well.
Yep.
If you're still not sure, maybe look at like the long-term performance. And I generally wouldn't say this because you know how they have news stories? Here's the best super funds of the last 12 months. And it's like, come on, that's ridiculous. It's like 1 year time frame. It's so meaningless.
It is completely meaningless.
And it could be for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah, they just happen to hold a bit more Tesla than the next super fund.
And so I generally say, like, look at maybe like 10-year performance or something like that, because you'll find that the lower, that's when the lower fees and something that's invested sensibly will kind of stand out a bit more. Like you'll see that the higher fee funds will drag over like a longer period. So don't look at 12 months, look at like much longer periods of time if you're going to look at that at all, because that can kind of help you delineate between what is generally better, a better fund than another, because you will find that a lot of the lower cost industry funds will be at the top of the performance records over like 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, they generally are. They do generally float to the top. So it's been a okay way to choose a fund in recent history anyway.
But that doesn't mean you should switch funds every 2 years based on performance. No. Because that's not a good idea.
No, not at all. Let's not get into the Spiva reports and the persistence report. You've seen the persistence reports as well?
I think so, yeah. I think so. And when you're comparing funds, make sure you're comparing like for like. So look at a balanced fund versus another balanced fund, and a high growth fund versus another high growth fund.
Yeah.
Because that can have a big difference on the performance metric that you might be looking at as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's enough about that. How should we invest our super PAT?
Yes.
What should we do there?
I would say go for a not-for-profit fund, industry fund, like Australian Super, Sun Super, Rest. There are plenty of...
There's tons of them out there.
Good options out there, yeah.
And they're all generally the same, right? There's none that are way better than any others, I don't think.
I do think there are some very popular options, and those would... I think the most popular right now is in the FIRE community, Sun Super, and that's generally because their single asset class investment options are run by Vanguard, and they're super low fee. And so when you invest in those single asset class options, you essentially just, you're investing in quasi-Vanguard funds. So I would say that is the most popular one at the moment in the FIRE community.
Okay. I've seen a lot of chatter. People get excited about the zero cost funds, like the Rest zero cost index funds. You would have seen those?
Yeah.
I think Barefoot Investor spoke about them as well.
I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan of those because they're not actually replicated index funds. They use derivatives to achieve their share market exposure.
Correct. So they're increased risk. But it's not clear to the consumer that there's increased risk there.
Yeah. So when I was looking at super funds, that was one of the options. And I decided, no, I don't want a derivatives type product. I want something that's like an actual replication of the actual ownership of the shares. I don't want some derivative nonsense. I actually want to own the underlying shares.
Yeah, correct.
So I wanted the actual Vanguard index replication, which Sun Super offer.
Yeah, exactly. And sorry, I think we just sort of skipped an important distinction. So when you put your money into superannuation, you can invest it in premixed options. These are these things we were talking about before, like high growth, balanced, conservative. But you generally, depending on the fund, also have the option to invest in single asset classes. So that means you invest in Australian shares, international shares, property, bonds, cash, and you choose your own proportions of those asset classes. And I'll also say generally it's cheaper to do it that way as well. And you have...
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. And you have more control over exactly what you're invested in. So you can decide to be 100% aggressive, which is what I do. Yeah, 100% in equities. Or, you know, you can build your own, like, oh, I want 20% in bonds and 80%. And generally, you're not paying those sort of 1-ish% fees when you do it this way. You're
not even paying 0.5% usually.
No, not at all. Especially like Sun Super and the super account I'm with, which was First State, now Aware Super, you're getting fees in the vicinity of 0.09% for that investment fee.
And once you add on the account fee and that, it becomes like 0.2, maybe a little bit higher than that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's still very low, so that's good.
Yeah, and that's much better than paying a 1-ish percentage fee to get like this abomination of 20 active investment managers in a high growth option.
So you spoke there about you like to invest 100% aggressively.
Mm.
And so what people might be wondering why that is, like what's wrong with balanced funds? They're quite conservative and they tend to own, like we said before, maybe like 20 to 30% of their investments might be in cash or bonds.
Mm.
And so why might that be a problem, Pat, over a long time frame?
Yeah, well, exactly, because it's over a long time frame.
So balanced options might make more sense if you have a more immediate requirement for the money. So you want to preserve some of the capital, or you want to protect yourself from downsides if you're drawing from that amount of money. But when you have a 30 to 40 year time frame, you really can tolerate volatility. And if you have the demeanor, or you just don't look at it, you should be able to tolerate the volatility much better than someone who needs the money immediately.
Because the cash and bonds will smooth out the ride, but if we're not using the money, we don't actually need to smooth out the ride, and we actually don't want to smooth out the ride because we want to be invested as much as possible in assets that have the highest chance of providing the highest long-term returns, and that tends to be higher growth assets like shares.
Yeah, exactly. So we just want to be as aggressive as possible to get the highest returns as possible while we have a long investment time frame.
And 30 to 40 years is pretty damn long.
Yep, that is as long as most people ever think about.
So having a high-ish amount of cash or bonds just doesn't make sense to me, I don't think.
No, it doesn't make a sense to me either, as with 30 or 40 years to go, not at all. Mm. I, in fact, no allocation to cash or bonds as far as I'm concerned at the moment.
Well, we'll get into what we do personally in a minute.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so what about, people often ask about the member direct options, because a lot of super funds nowadays, they'll also give you the option to have a special type of account where you can essentially invest in anything that's listed on the ASX. And so that might be individual companies, it might be ETFs that you like, it might be LICs or something like that. And so it does come at an extra cost. But so what do we think about this kind of option, Pat? Because a lot of people do talk about it. Because I think, well, if I'm kind of going this far and taking an interest in my investments, why wouldn't I then choose to control exactly where my money's going and choose my own investments with super as well?
Yeah, generally you can actually access funds cheaper through the single asset class options than you can in through member direct. So for example, you can access, I think, Vanguard International Fund through SunSuper for 0.09%, whereas if you try to access that as a listed ETF, VGS, that would be 0.18%. So that's one reason you might not want to do that.
And those, like, to be clear, those are the same thing.
Yeah. To be clear, they are pretty well identical.
That's why people wonder. They think, well, is this international shares fund, is this the same thing? Maybe I should choose this member option so I can choose exactly the ETF that I want to invest in. But if you're choosing something that's, say, international index, it will be exactly the same thing as the international index fund VGS that you might buy directly.
Yeah, not in all cases though, but they're very, very close. But some super funds, which I'll get into soon, make certain moral exclusions in their single asset class options. So this whole ethical investing thing.
So this type of account will definitely come at an extra cost. They'll charge you a higher account fee, and you'll also be charged brokerage for each time you place a trade. So when your super fund, when your employer pays money into your super fund, it'll sit there and then it'll be available in your member account, and then you'll decide what to invest in. But you'll have to pay brokerage for every single trade. And that could be, if you're going to do it once a month or twice a month, that's going to add up to quite a bit of brokerage fees over the course of a year.
Yes, definitely.
And I actually did this for a while, Pat. I actually had a member account. Yes. I'll just air my dirty laundry now.
So, go ahead.
So I had a member direct account. So when I first started investing in shares, I started stock picking, I think, as a lot of people start out thinking, well, I'll just pick my own stocks and, you know, I'll kind of do this myself and see how I go. So I decided to do this with my super as well. And so I had a member account with ING, and I had, that was, the fees weren't too bad there for a little while. And so I was picking stocks, and some did good and others did not so good. And then I realized, like, on average, it probably wasn't really worth it. And I was kind of losing interest at the same time because I had kind of had a lot of stuff to follow. And I decided I didn't really want to spend that much time on my investments as I thought I did. And at the same time, ING also jacked up the fee on that account.
Yep.
And so that was very frustrating as well. And so I ended up winding that up and putting it into a low cost low-cost industry fund where I don't have to do anything. But yeah, that was my little adventure into member direct options.
Oh, you can't underestimate the value of simplicity sometimes, can you? But I suppose I do definitely want to mention briefly that there is a sort of very grey tax area with super funds, and this may be a good reason to use member direct options. So in a typical super fund, like the Sun Super or First State Super we were talking about before in their pooled investments, that'll be the pre-mixed options or the single asset class options. These are all pooled investments. So what this sort of means is that the pooled investment is taxed as a whole. And that means that as money's pulled out or money or capital gains are realized, the whole investment suffers. The whole investment, the pooled investment, pays for that tax. Now, this can end up being like pretty unfair on people who haven't sold out. So what these pooled investments do to rectify this unfairness or this inequality is they provision for all of the unrealized capital gains as soon as there are unrealized capital gains. And just to sort of dumb that down a bit, what that means is that typically a super fund has to pay 10% on their capital, long-term capital gains. So instead of taking that 10% out when the capital gains are realized, when the shares are sold, the super fund just provisions for it. So if in a year, Vanguard International Fund in the single asset class option makes 10%, the super fund will actually only report it to its members, that being you, as a 9% gain, because they've taken 1% off to provision for future capital gains.
And so that people can kind of think of it as in they set aside that money for future tax liabilities.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't happen on one specific day, it's kind of updated constantly and it's part of the
unit price.
The unit price that you might see that the super fund will show you that this the unit price of each option. So it's up, it's already built into that to that price.
Yeah, correct. So when people say that you can swap super funds without paying any tax, or you can swap options in a super fund without paying any tax, the reason that is so. The reason you can do that is because the tax has already been provisioned away out of your gains.
And so in a weird way, the people who like to switch funds every 3 months are benefiting from this, and the long-term investors are essentially getting penalized.
Yeah, exactly.
Because these gains are being withheld essentially from the value of the fund to pay for the tax liabilities of the people who are switching in and out.
Yeah, exactly. And this actually ends up being pretty significant over a long period of time. You know, taking 1% off the returns, taking 10% of the gains constantly, continuously, actually ends up compounding to a very large amount over a 30 or 40 year time frame.
Well, it turns a 10% return into a 9% return.
Yeah, precisely.
And so technically, it could be more efficient to have a member direct option where you pay a certain percentage each year to have this special account and then invest directly in the ETF version and do that yourself, because even though you're paying higher fees, there's a decent chance that it could still work out to be less in overall fees or overall tax than the pooled option, which provisions for these higher tax liabilities on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and just to be clear, in these member direct options, once you switch from a accumulation account to a retirement phase account, there is no more tax owable. So that means once you reach preservation age, say 60, and you transition your super into a retirement phase account, you can then pull all that money out completely tax-free. So people like ourselves, Dave, who are in pooled investment options, all this tax has been provisioned away. And then when we transition to a retirement phase account, all of that money that's been provisioned away just disappears.
And I guess we should explain why this is. So a member direct account, for some reason, they get taxed. Each of those member direct accounts is taxed individually, whereas the pooled funds that you might be in, the premix option and whatever, they're pooled as a one big entity. You know, people aren't taxed separately there. But yeah, the member direct options, you are taxed for that individual account based on whatever you're invested in and any trading activity you do.
Yeah.
So that's why there's a difference in the tax treatment of those two options.
Yeah. And there are some small little bonuses that some particular superannuation funds will give their members when they switch to a retirement phase account. I think AusSuper gives some token amount, like a few thousand, up to a few thousand dollars. And I think QSuper actually gives a nice amount, but it still doesn't make up for the decades of lost returns from this provisioning.
And so that's to account for the extra tax over time that was paid.
Yeah, correct.
It's like a little give back, essentially.
Yeah, it's a little give back, but it doesn't go far enough if you ask me, because you've just lost 30 or 40 years of compounding on that amount of money. So let's bring this all back, because that was pretty technical. What does this mean? That investing in the single asset class options is perhaps not the most efficient way to do it.
But it's the easiest.
But it's definitely the easiest. You can do member direct, and you might be better off doing that over the long term, but that's probably something you have to weigh up yourself.
And it's still kind of a gray area. It's not super clear.
No. Yeah.
On the details of it.
Yeah, superannuation is super opaque, especially when it comes to this sort of nitty gritty technical detail.
So sorry if we've confused you, but we thought we should probably cover that anyway.
Yeah, I didn't want to. Yeah, I didn't want to not cover that when it does make quite a big difference.
Mm.
And just say, oh, this is what we think. This is what we do, and we think it's great. But there's definitely grayness there, and people may choose to do something different.
But could there be some light on the horizon, Pat?
Well, I am. Yes, as a lot of people in the community will know, Vanguard has a superannuation fund in the works. Now, we know very little details about this superannuation fund that Vanguard is working on, but I fervently, fervently hope that it will be sort of a direct investment option. So you can invest in their funds directly and you get taxed as an individual. And I think their very recent Vanguard personal investor account that they've opened, I think they opened it earlier this year or late last year, I'm hoping that is sort of a very good indication of what the superannuation fund will look like, because it is structured very similarly to how a lot of superannuation funds are structured. So they have an admin fee up to a certain amount. So that's their 0.2% fee up to $600. A lot of superannuation funds do that. And then you pay for the investments fees themselves. So I think there's an okay chance that this Vanguard super fund that they're working on will be similar, and it will actually be a good option. But we'll speak more about that when we know more details, because we're just speculating, really.
Mm. So if that comes out, we'll definitely have to do a bit of a podcast about that.
Yeah, we'll definitely need an update on this episode.
All right, so what do we do personally with our super, and how do we invest it? I'll let you go first, Pat.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, we missed a point. We missed on how some super funds like to modify their indexes.
Yeah.
I thought you wanted to cover it because you mentioned it before.
I'll just cover it in this section where I'm talking about my own super. So I invest in First State Super, which very recently changed their name and branding to Aware Super. And I'm currently invested in a mix of 55% international, 45% Australian. But I'm sort of working toward more like an 80% international with my new contributions, which is where I want to end up, 80% international, 20% Australian. Equities only, and that'll be 100% equities.
You know, you could just switch it now tax-free because of what we talked about.
Yeah, I do realize that. Well, that's another thing. I just, somewhere in the back of my mind, I hope that First State Super will have a change of heart and give back some of their tax provisioned. But that's a very long shot. But anyway, I'll probably just say now, this whole Aware Super, if it wasn't immediately obvious, their branding is now changed because they want to position themselves as a superannuation fund that invests ethically and sustainably. So they're Aware Superannuation. They're aware of current issues and aware of sustainability and aware of ethical issues. And this actually peeves me quite a bit, because superannuation funds are meant to be there to do the best for their members, not to hold active political or ethical positions. And what ends up happening is these super funds are changing their investments so that they can invest more ethically. So they might have exclusions like tobacco or weapons, or they might go further, or they might not go that far. But I'm a fervent supporter of just broad-based index investing. I don't want any sort of active bets whatsoever. Or I don't want anything kind of muddy.
Filters.
Yeah, I don't want any filters. I don't want any choices outside affecting what's being invested in. So this definitely might push me over the edge to change superannuation funds to a fund that doesn't, you know, get their fingers dirty in my investments because they want to take a political or ethical stand.
And just to be clear, it's not only Aware Super that does this. Pat, you know, a lot of these super fund providers will exclude, like, what did you say, tobacco companies and maybe weapon companies and that.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, I guess it continues on from there, and there'll be more and more exclusions over time as, I guess, they try to position themselves as being, you know, socially responsible and all the rest of it. So just to be clear, it's not like we're not picking on this one company. A lot of them do it. It might just be that Aware is taking it to the next level in terms of their... how they're going about it.
Well, you can see
a lot of them do it.
They've changed their entire branding around this position they want to take. So clearly they're taking it very seriously.
Yeah. How about you, Dave? Right. What do you do with your superannuation?
Yeah, so mine is a bit more simple than that. So I invest into SunSuper after having tried the member direct thing a while back. And so now I invest in SunSuper. And that is essentially set up in their 100% international index option. So that's managed by Vanguard, I believe. And I have it set up like that because currently most of our portfolio is in Aussie shares because I like to use the dividends for retirement income. So I've just set my super up as international and I'll have a higher amount of Aussie outside super. And that's how I've chosen to structure it for now. And so that helps kind of balance that out a bit.
Do you invest only in unhedged or?
Yes, that one is.
Yeah.
Because it's not a huge amount of our net worth. So leaving it unhedged, I mean, it's about 20% of our net worth. So leaving it unhedged makes more sense from a diversification kind of standpoint.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
that was. Should we do a little summary of our key points for today, Pat?
Yeah, I'll get into that. So if you want to be financially independent as soon as possible, super probably isn't the best option unless, you know, you're in a very specific circumstance and you're very close to preservation age anyway. There are issues around access and changing of rules that we've gone over in this episode. And so if you want to become financially independent as soon as possible, you absolutely need to put money in your personal portfolio for flexibility and access. We like to keep things simple, like our regular investments, so we just invest in standard index funds, but through our super, which are these single asset class options. Both SunSuper that Dave invests in and First State or Aware Super that I invest in are essentially index options run by Vanguard. They're just packaged up for these superannuation funds and their branding. And so they're invested in, you know, very high growth, 100% equities, because we have very long time frames to our retirements, and you might, may or may not be exactly the same, but you definitely want to just keep it simple like that. Keep costs low means you'll end up with higher returns and a higher balance later on when you can access it. So that can be worth tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yeah, think of it as your old person money. Or your health fund money.
Old man or old lady money.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be
so
like your...
So that's how we think about it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
How's that? That pretty much it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, we'd love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We got some... Did you see the latest ones? They are pretty good, Pat.
No, I haven't. What do they look like?
Oh, you have to read them, mate. We've got some good ones there.
Okay. I'll definitely get in.
So thank you very much for those guys. We really appreciate it. So keep them coming. And if you have a topic suggestion, something you'd like us to talk about, or if you have a question that you'd like us to answer on the show, you can email us at fireinchillpod@gmail.com. See you next time.